Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21.
Welcome to It's Not Even Past, a history of the distant present, hosted by Evan Tucker and the production of the AS21 Podcast Network. This podcast is available on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and audio.as21.com.
For this, our first music podcast, we're going to begin by listening to six of my favorite minutes in any opera. In Aida, during the Egyptian sacrifice to the war god Ptah.
Thank you.
solemn rite as sublime as any music in the Catholic Church, conjuring a civilization dead for 2,000 years. Only the slightest appropriation? How much can one appropriate musically from a culture whose music hasn't been heard in millennia? But an invocation of a time and place for a different era who could barely imagine ancient Egypt. How different from our information age when Egyptian history is a Google search. But done with awed respect, not exploitation. A tribute to one culture in its prime from another. And if ancient Egyptian sublimity seemed tyrannical and bellicose, it obviously called the tyranny of modern imperial states to mind. When I wrote this cast rough draft, it was the day Baltimore's Charles Theater showed the second half of Bernardo Bertolucci's 1900, a now restored 5.5-hour cinematic fresco about the breakdown of Italy's time immemorial way of life in the 20th century. The first half was great. The second half sucked. What matters here is that the movie begins with a peasant announcing on horseback that Giuseppe Verdi died. For Italy, Verdi's death signified the 19th century's close, the end of old lifestyles, old achievements, old dreams. Much as Steven Spielberg is modern America, Giuseppe Verdi was the Italy of his time, perhaps much more so. Born just before the Napoleonic Wars end, his international star rose just as the 1848 revolution made Italian independence and unification inevitable, and Verdi became the cultural voice of what we call the Risorgimento, or the Italian independence movement, as Mazzini was the political voice and Garibaldi the military. He lived to almost 90, long after Italy turned into a democracy with a monarch as its figurehead, and if its democracy was unstable, well, so was modern Italy's. And even after 75 years of dysfunction, modern Italy is not a dictatorship. There was little reason to foretell the turmoil which awaited the Italy of Verdi's time. Verdi, like Spielberg, is emblematic of a country at the height of its achievement. And at the time of America's greatest dominance, many couldn't get enough Verdi. American singers at the Met, like Roberta Peters and Robert Merrill, were on Ed Sullivan right before Elvis Presley and right after Chuck Berry. It was a different era. There was not yet the enormous back catalog of American music, and most intellectuals didn't move to New York or Chicago. They stayed in their small towns. So if small town intelligentsia wanted to hear music better than Top 40, they had to hear it on classical radio or television variety shows. If metropolitan opera divas like Beverly Sills and Joan Sutherland weren't as well known as movie stars, they were damn close. Opera was mainstream, and no composer ever wrote with an ear toward the mainstream like Verdi. A cynical era has so much to make fun of in Verdi. The melodrama, the sincerity, the stupidity of the characters, the pa orchestra, the clichés of the libretto, the death scenes where sopranos sing their lungs out for 30 minutes. But when a cynical era curdles into an angry era, there is still much more to hate. The glorification of male rage and frail women, the exoticizing of Eastern culture, the near monopoly Verdi has held over opera for a century and a half. Verdi is the face of extravagant opera productions that strew money about the stage for the rich's pleasure, sucking out money from generations of composers who never got a proper public. Verdi didn't used to be like this. In an era when we say what we mean and mean what we say, there's less purpose for Verdi. But in an era when Austria's censors guarded all art for intimations of treason, Verdi put Italian suffering and longing for freedom into the mouths of the world's most oppressed. Jews, Romanis, Ethiopians, Moors, the disabled, and most of all, women. The state or clerics Verdi portrayed were often from faraway lands, but he portrayed them in the most totalitarian terms. In code, Verdi sang of freedom. And every Italian of his time deciphered it, along with millions who lived in the world's worst regimes. Except for Beethoven, there is no composer more synonymous with liberty. But towering as Verdi is, he's not quite so universal that he translates to every era. While performances of Mozart thrive more than ever, Verdi faces a clear decline in his popularity. In an era complaining about opera's interminable nostalgia, its glamorizing of women's alleged frailty and men's alleged strength, its orientalizing of distant cultures, the cliched tropes of Verdi are ground zero of everything which today's intelligentsia finds offensive about opera. It's easy to forget the necessity of liberty in an era of illiberal democracy. When liberty is an offensive force of its own, enabling the rich to implement plutocracy, you can't quite blame people for finding Verdi difficult, even if you find their ideology stupid. Verdi encountered similar pushback in the late 19th century from radical ideologues and aesthetes. Just like our era, the era of Puccini and Strauss was more decadent. And yet a new society, across the Pacific Ocean, emerges with exponential quickness, one accustomed not to illiberal democracy, but to dictatorship. 40 million Chinese children learn the piano now. Their whole lives will exist in a social credit system, government by algorithm that only distributes opportunity to citizens whose activities the government finds palatable. If they long for freedom, and I have to imagine they do, they will never be permitted to express their longings aloud. As in the Soviet Union, artists and writers are policed with draconian severity. It can only be in the unspecificity of music that the Chinese may feel free, and it's only in the longings of unfathomably distant lands and eras and persons that the Chinese can find their longings articulated with specificity. However insulting and dated Verdi seems to many Americans today, he may seem very current indeed in the East. Even if Verdi leaves America, he may find a home among the non-Western people opera long orientalized.
Much of what happened, what is discovered now, will of course be secret. We will not be given the full answer.
This has been It's Not Even Past, a history of the distant present, hosted by Evan Tucker, a production of the AS21 Podcast Network, and brought to you by AS21 Audio. Find this and other episodes on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and our home on the web, audio.as21.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/itsnoteven past. That's it for this episode, but we'll be back, because the past isn't dead, it's not even past.
Copyright 2018, AS21 Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
AS21 Media. What do you want your story to be?